You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Welcome to Smart Sex, Smart Love. We're talking about sex goes beyond the taboos, and talking about love goes beyond the honeymoon. I'm Dr. Joe Court. Thanks for tuning in. Today, we're going to be talking about LGBTQIA youth, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer and questioning, intersex, and ally and asexual. In the 60s, television played an enormous part in social awareness around race. For LGBTQ people, the advent of the World Wide Web was a game changer in the 90s. Today, social media is the primary awareness tool around gender diversity and of the needs and experiences of trans and gender nonconforming people, including children. My guest today is Joe Langford, MA. Joe is a dad, a master's level therapist, author, and sex educator for tweens, teens, and parents in Seattle, Washington. From working in peer counseling and student outreach programs in high schools to medical, residential, and psychiatric settings, Joe provides trainings for organizations and agencies, as well as therapy, to adolescents and families around a gamut of sexuality themes. With an emphasis on LGBTQ issues, internet safety, digital citizenship, and comprehensive sex education. His newest book, The Pride Guide, is a guide to sexual and social development, safety, and health for queer youth and for their families, covering all aspects of LGBTQ adolescents, both online and off. This book is the first puberty book written with queer and specifically trans youth in mind. Joe also promotes healthy, positive, and safe sexual and social behavior at his website, beheroes.net. Welcome, Joe.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
I'm so glad you're here, too. And I thought we could start, if you wouldn't mind. I was kind of going, you know, when I do the LGBT, then I say the LGBTQ, and sometimes I'll say LGBTQIA. And then in here, you know, you said queer youth. Can you speak to that? Like, what do all these things mean?
The letters, the initialism?
Well, why so many? And, what's the difference, really, I guess I should ask, between queer and LGBTQIA?
Well, I think queer in my head, in my definition, I think it just means like not straight or cisgender, like everything that's sort of outside of that sort of what we think of as the primary norm, right? So it kind of covers everybody, you can say, just one syllable word without having to do all the letters, because there's so many letters out there. And I think that's great. I think the point of it, of that whole initialism, is inclusion, and it can sort of morph into this kind of unwieldy alphabet soup sometimes as well. But queer can just kind of get the point across in a kind of a more simple way, and I think that being able to use that word as well is in that vein of that sort of empowerment, disempowerment thing, where you can sort of take the word back, like when people who aren't queer use the word as a weapon and have for so many decades and generations, being able to use it in a positive way to refer to you and your people. I think there's power in that too.
Yes. So, and you use the word
double positive whammy.
Yes. Use the word cisgender, C-I-S-G-E-N-D-E-R, cisgender. Can you tell people who don't know what that means what it is?
Yes. Which I find myself doing kind of more often than I think that I should, but basically it means, so someone who's cisgendered is someone who is whose outside appearance and their sort of sense of themselves matches the genitalia with which they were born. So a man who shows up as male and it's they're aligned in that. It's sort of the opposite of transgender. So transgender is someone whose outside appearance or inner sense of themselves doesn't necessarily match the plumbing that they were born with. And so cisgender is when it does. But that word feels like it's a word that everybody just kind of knows to me, but more and more, like I've run into situations, especially kind of recently, even professionals that are like, what does that word mean? and having to educate them.
Mm-hmm. And I know that one of your top things you do is working with the parents of queer youth. And you say that statistically, most parents of LGBT youth are not seeking out any type of formal support or therapy around having an LGB child. What are those? What are the challenges for them then? And how do you help them?
Well, I think there's lots of challenges to parenting a queer kid. And I think in some ways it's, there's lots of reasons that they don't seek out resources. And sometimes it's kind of sweet because they're like, yeah, my kid is gay or my kid is trans. Like, I don't really see that as a problem. So I'm not going to go seek out any help or resources because they associate doing that with addressing a problem, which is great. But I think parents still need resources. And then there's other parents who either don't care or don't notice, right? The kids who are kind of sort of struggling or figuring things out on their own and they haven't come out to their parents. So the parents don't even know that there's an issue to be dealt with. But I think that parenting a queer kid is different than parenting a straight kid in almost every way. Like a lot of the dynamics are exactly the same, but you know, at things from sleepovers to sex education, like those things, you know, are at a at a different angle than they are with straight or cisgender kids. And sometimes parents have a hard time kind of remembering that. But I do a lot of work with parents around queer kids, and I'm always so refreshed. Like one of my favorite things is when parents will come and they'll say, we think our kid's gay or our kid or child's a lesbian. Like we're totally down with that, but we have no idea what the hell we're doing. Mm. Like, can you help us not screw this up?
And what do you say to them? What do you say?
Well, I just kind of give them sort of a patent list. Like I encourage them to, you know, ask about it, to talk about it. A lot of parents are kind of sheepish about bringing it up. And so I kind of do this balance of like, it's okay to talk about it and you can ask them questions. But don't do it every day or every meal. You know what I mean? Like you don't have to do it all the time. Because some parents get kind of gung ho and jump in there and kind of be a little intimidating with it, I think. And then I really encourage them to kind of help make their house a little more queer friendly, you know, having like some books on the shelf, some bumper stickers on the car, you know, a coffee mug with a rainbow on it or something, you know what I mean? Just something that kind of gives them symbols and evidence around their home that their home is an inclusive place. But generally it's, you know, letting your kid be different. A lot of parents are scared for queer kids in terms of, you know, if their hair is too blue or their mannerisms are too obvious, like they're going to bring violence on themselves or someone will target them for violence. And I kind of have to help parents navigate that part too sometimes.
And how do you tell them? Like, because I do get that too. Parents say, I'm really worried and the way they're dressing or they seem like, you know, they're going to bring attention to themselves. And the kid says, well, I'm going to do this. So I'm sorry. You're going to have to figure it out. How do you help a parent, you know, calm themselves down?
I mean, a lot of that kind of depends on the situation in terms, you know, safety is always the most important thing. But then I'm also a big believer in self-expression and self-esteem. And those things are, I think, intimately related. And so if the kid wants to have blue hair for a while, and that's a way that they're kind of accessing who they are and trying to project it to the world, then, you know, unless there's a clear, like obvious safety issue, like, so let's let them express themselves for a while, but then be ready and support them because, you know, honestly, we're living in some dark days right now. And there's a certain flavors of hate that kind of thought had been almost eradicated and they're back with a vengeance and they're going to be targets. The kids, you know, queer people, especially kids, are going to be targets and that's going to happen. And so part of me is like, well, there's no really avoiding that. So let's lean into it. Let's be ready for it. Let's support them when it happens and kind of go from there.
I think it
helps kids to be able to learn how to navigate that stuff. Cause it is just sort of unrelenting. It seems to me sometimes, and they're going to have to deal with it either way.
What do you tell parents? Cause I get this a lot too, when they say, okay, so now I know that my daughter is lesbian and she wants to, or bisexual, let's say even whatever. And now she wants to have a sleepover with a girl. And I don't know, are they going to have sex? Are they girlfriends? And you know, it's different if they were both heterosexual, but now, what do I do? It's like having my heterosexual child who wants to have an opposite sex person come and sleep over. What do you say to that?
Yeah, that is really funny. It comes up a lot. It's one of the most popular things that happens. And so I kind of have to coach parents on how to approach it, because I say don't approach it that way because your kid is, you know, LGBT, whatever letter, but just approach it like, what would your stance be in the, like you said, an opposite, if they were a heterosexual kid, would you allow it? Yes, then allow it. If they wouldn't, then don't allow it, but make it based on that, on some kind of level of fairness. Because kids are, you know, you've worked with kids before, I think, right? Like, you know, they'll play the homophobe card, you know, as soon as they can, like, you're just being a homophobe.
I have to
help parents kind of deal with that, right? Like, no, this is not homophobia. This is just parenting, but nice try.
Well, what I love about your work is you work a lot. Is it primarily with youth?
It is, yes.
Yeah. And then you have two books prior to this current book, Pride Guide, that are about youth, right? Male and female, correct?
Yes.
What are the names of them?
The Spare Me the Talk series. So Spare Me the Talk was a book for teenage boys or boy-identified people. Because there wasn't any book for boys. There had been one before, like a puberty growing up book that was just for boys. But it was out of print. And so I was like, this kind of needs to be in the world. Because, you know, there's a lot of great books that kind of jump both sides of that sort of fence. But there wasn't a book that was just for boys. There's 100 million books for girls, but there wasn't a book that was just for boys. So I wanted to write that for the teenagers themselves about growing up, puberty, their bodies, consent, sexuality, identification, all that stuff. And then the section in the back for the parents as well. People liked it. I got great feedback on it. And then the biggest feedback I got was like, you should write a girl version of this book. So I was like, the girls have 800 books already, but okay. But now, I did it anyway. So it's kind of fun. So
why do you think
it's the only book for girls written by a guy?
Oh, wow. Wow. Kind of fun. Now, why do you think there weren't as many books or hardly any for boys?
I just think we have really underserved our boys, honestly, you know what I mean? And we can tell, like, this, you know, all this stuff in our culture right now is coming to a head in terms of, you know, sexual assault and violence and privilege. It's we're figuring out how to deal with it now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just not the time for boys. You know what I mean? I think right now, in kind of a big way, is it's the time for girls, and guys kind of need to shut our mouths a little bit and let the girls have their time and talk about their experiences and what can we learn from that and what changes do we need to make.
Sure. Yeah. And what made you decide? Okay. Go ahead.
But at some point there's going to need to be a reckoning. We're going to have to figure out how to deal with our boys in a proactive way so that those problems don't continue. It's not necessarily young men's fault that this is going on. But this is how we're growing them, right? Like we're seeing now with all the Kavanaugh stuff, like all those things we did with boys in the '80s, like it's coming to a head now. Right. And we have to start doing something soon for the boys who are adolescents now, so that in 30 years, we don't have a bunch of more Kavanaughs running around.
Mm-hmm.
And we're learning how to do that and why that's important. But I think culturally we're not quite there yet. I think it's right and timely that we give attention to our young women. But at some point we're going to have to talk about boys and boyhood and how to raise them and what do they need to know and how do we teach them that. That time is coming, and I'm hoping to be part of that conversation, I guess.
So then you wrote these two books, and then you thought, okay, I'm going to write a book for queer youth, Pride Guide. What made you decide that?
Mostly because there wasn't one. It was like 2017, and I was looking for resources for these families that we're talking about. And I was just like, how the hell is there not a puberty book for trans kids? Like, that is insane to me. And I called around and I talked to a lot of people, and there just was nothing out there. So I decided to write it.
And in it, And just since you've written it, what would you like to see more of or less in terms of the culture around queer youth?
I think just acknowledging that they are there. I think sort of the prevailing theory for a really long time is that it's like it was a small number of the population. But I think now as kids have become more vocal, and I think like you were saying at the beginning, like with the advent of social media, I think that has really played a big part in it. But it's more part of the conversation now, and I think that needs to continue. I think people need to understand that it's not just like, you know, a single digit percentage of the population. Those numbers are growing and changing, and as acceptance grows, they're getting bigger. And even the adults are learning from the kids now, and we've got people coming out in their 40s and 50s and 60s because I think the kids are doing such a great job. And so understanding that how much the culture needs to shift in that, like acknowledging that they're there, making room for them, helping them feel accepted. But, you know, I think it's that kind of change, I think, is big and hard for people. Mm-hmm. The bathroom examples being prominent, right?
Right. Bringing bathroom gender neutral.
Yeah. How hard is this conversation? Like, I don't know. Like, you know, I talk to schools all the time. I'm like, what? This isn't rocket science. Like, this is pretty easy to figure out. Like, why are you stuck with this?
And what I loved about Pride Guide that I think is so important for parents to even hear and youth, but I learned things about you. You talk about when trans males, teenagers want to wear binders, right? So when they're flattening the chest, how not to wear it more than 8 to 10 or what is it, 12 hours, not to sleep in it, stand to pee, the packing. You know, you get into all the hormone blockers, when to begin, how to navigate through that. I know that's a lot I just said, but could you speak to a little bit of that?
Sure. I mean, I'm not sure what specifically you want to talk about, but just that idea that like the kids need these things. And if, you know, it's some, you know, trans kid in Kansas, like what are their resources going to be and are they going to be reliable? And, you know, if somebody has an adult in their life that they can ask questions and rely on, then that's great for them. That the prognosis for that kid is a lot more positive. But those other kids who are isolated, of which there are many, you know, their resources are Google. And when you Google stuff, you never know what you're going to get necessarily. There's some great reliable sites out there for queer kids, but there's a bunch of other ones that have a lot of misinformation or a lot of outdated information. And, so I just wanted to try to get something that could be accessible, not just to kids, but again, like I said, in the back, there's a whole section for the parents because there's so many challenges in terms of parenting queer kids and things to keep in mind.
That's what I liked about your book. And I'm glad you answered it the way I wanted you to. I want people to hear, including therapists who might be listening to this podcast, because they always ask, how do you have these conversations? When do you have them? You know, what are the conversations? What are the things you say? You're very specific in the book about all this stuff. And I think extremely helpful. Yeah. Have people said that to you?
Yeah, they have actually. And I've gotten the pleasure of doing like trainings for agencies and other professionals. Because like I said, even like trained professional therapists and, you know, like twice in the last 6 months, like they'd be like, well, what does cisgender mean? I'm like, you are a therapist. Like,
I know. You should know what that word means. Don't. I know.
But, you know, they don't. But it is because I think, you know, this idea like, oh, it's a really small percentage of the population. So maybe I don't need to be super well versed with that. So I talked to other professionals about how to just make room for queer kids, right? Like you're a therapist, you know, most of us have an intake form and we ask about sexual preference or gender identity maybe in the intake. And then we fill out the form and then we kind of maybe never revisit that if there wasn't anything there that looks like it needed revisiting. So I really encourage therapists like, you know, after a couple of months when you've built the rapport and the kid trusts you and you're working with them, like, maybe ask them again about how they identify or where they are on the gay to straight scale. And you probably get a different answer than you did in the, you know, when it was the fourth question on the intake form that you asked, you know what I mean? When they just met you 6 minutes ago.
Yes.
And so stuff like that, I think, you know, how to have same thing, like queer friendly books, maybe a poster or something like that in your office so that they can see that they're represented in there and safe. And a lot of therapists, I think, just kind of don't necessarily think about that. So, yeah, I get to help people kind of figure that out too.
What do you say to people? My therapist in my talks say, ask me this all the time, as do parents. Oh my gosh, they say it's like, I've actually had people say it's becoming a trend, and it's trending to kids are identifying different genders out of the blue and different sexual orientations out of the blue, younger and younger. What do we do? They're like almost panicked about it. I have my answer, but I'd like to hear yours first.
My answer generally is just breathe through it. I think as an adult and someone who, you know, hasn't grown up in that specific culture, I think it is, you know, this new culture where with all the languaging and the new words that are popping up, it can be overwhelming and kind of annoying sometimes as well, but breathe through it. Right. But with the kids, like, just meet them where they are. When they say, oh, I'm identifying this way and this way and this way, and they throw a few adjectives at you, just ask them one, like, what do you mean by that? Like, explain that word to me. When you say that, what are you talking about? Can you break it down for me? And kind of give them the experience of steering that ship and educating you, I think is good for them. But then you can also see what they're actually talking about, because there are a lot of adjectives out there mm-hmm. that kids are using, that people are using. But kids don't always understand them accurately. So they may be saying one word, but meaning something different than that. And so you can sort of, you know, help sort of coax out what it is that they're like, the meat of what they're trying to tell you about themselves. And then the adjective becomes less important. And then you can educate them if they are actively using a word wrong.
Right. Because I've heard the term, kids are creating boutique identities, which I love. Right. And what I say to parents, so you say what I say, but I also add this. I say, look, the job description of a teenager is to be confused and change their mind every day about career, about girlfriends, about boyfriends, about school, about all the way they dress, their hair. So why now that they now have permission to be confused and explore and have all kinds of identities around gender and sexuality, it's part of their job. They now have the permission our generation never had. Would you agree with that?
Oh yeah, there was what, like the three choices. There was gay or straight,
yes.
For example, right? And then there was bi, but that was hardly ever talked about, you know. So it's nice that they have this, and I think it's fantastic that they are spending so much time and energy, like, thinking about who they are and thinking about sexuality and thinking about how their identity, like, slams up against another person's in the world and how those, like, fit in, like, a puzzle piece kind of way, I think is fantastic.
I do,
and
too.
And bodes really well for their generation when they become adults.
Yep.
But the languaging can be exhausting.
Yeah, because it's a revolution, right? Hopefully we'll get to some more. But, yeah, I feel like what they're saying is, I'm not fitting myself into some old-fashioned generational word that doesn't fit for me. I'm going to take this and that and create my own, and you're going to refer to me how I want to be referred to, not squeeze myself into this little box, which I think is awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you talk
it takes some work to get to what they're meaning or what they're wanting to convey sometimes, but I think it's totally worth it.
Right. And I always say to therapists too, and I think parents, right, you say, oh, so that's how you self-identify. What does that mean for you? And not to even assume, even if they use a word, you think you know what it means. Kids and even adults are using terms and they're changing the meaning. You have to ask them what it means for them.
Oh yeah. And it's just, it changes every minute too. I mean, like even writing the Pride Guide, like it was so hard to stop writing because I think I'm like, oh, I'm done. Oh no, there's a new word. Oh, this thing. Oh, we don't call it that anymore. Now it's called this.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it's been out for a year and it's already, like, you know, parts of it are already outdated. The landscape is just shifting so quickly all the time.
I know. Well, I want to just address, so parents would be listening, even youth, internet danger, right? So, I mean, I talk about how I always, in my talks, I always include the idea that there are young boys, 14 years old, who look older and get on Grindr, the smart app phone with a GPS system, and they say they're 19-year-old sophomores, and they end up being sexual with older men who think, and the older men think they're with a 19-year-old young man, but they're not. They're with a minor. And when I talk to therapists about this, they say, you know, they talk about, well, they would tell their client to find other ways to be on the internet to meet people. And, you know, there really aren't any other ways for especially LGBT people to meet others, as far as I know, in terms of chatting or hooking up. Or so what do you say to parents and teens about the internet and how to meet each other?
Well, I mean, that's my other wheelhouse, is dealing with parenting digital generations, like around the internet, like being safe and smart online. And how do you have a relationship with that as a parent? How do you monitor what does safety mean for different kids at different ages in terms of their screens? And so I deal with that quite a bit. And I'm a huge fan of parental monitoring and making contracts with kids around their behavior for being online. So that, you know, even like an older kid who might be 15 or 16, like, you can still like have a culture in your house where they ask before they download apps, and or you get alerts if they download apps onto their devices while they're in your house, like that kind of thing. So you can keep that conversation going. But then talking to kids also about just like the laws in their states and the impact that those things can have, because yay for that 14-year-old, he like gets to pretend to be 19 and somebody falls for it and he gets some, but then the other person can go to jail, right? Like registered as like a sex offender for, you know, felony level charges and things like that. And they have to understand like your choices have impacts on people outside of you. That they don't always consider necessarily.
Yes. And I want to make it so clear, when I just said, what are the other alternatives? I'm not at all in favor of these young kids getting on Grindr. They don't understand safer sex. They don't understand internet danger.
Yeah, no.
Right? They're misleading to the older adults who think they're with somebody who is an adult and they're not. I mean, it's a mess, really. And I like that you, in your book, write out and enlist the healthier ways of kids meeting each other, like through Trevor Space, right?
Yeah, there are some sort of, not just like dating apps, but like connection apps for LGBT youth that aren't Grindr, right? But they're definitely not as popular as Grindr or as advertised. And I think that those, they can be, right, helpful to kids, especially the ones who are isolated. They're not necessarily dating or hookup apps, which, you know, some of the kids think that that's what they're looking for, but
right.
But they are about connecting to other people.
What would you like people to know most about your book, your work, in this podcast, before we come to a close?
Just I think how important it is to work with the parents as well, to get the parents on board. You know, there's situations, of course, working with LGBT youth where it's not going to be safe for them to come out to their parents. And you have to figure out how to navigate that. But most parents will come around, I like to think, and they just need some support in parenting queer kids. It's just such a different creature than it is. And, you know, they get intimidated and they have to sometimes go back and clean up mistakes and, you know, undo some of the stupid jokes they may have said or whatever, and helping them do that and deal with their own shame and fear and grief is really important work to be done.
You're doing really, really good work, and you're right. You're a voice, for queer youth and for boys and for girls. But for the boys and queer youth, where there's not that much out there, I think we should be thankful to you for writing all this stuff. Joe, where would you like people
Thanks,
to
Joe.
Be able to find you?
So my website is beheroes.net. And
can you spell it?
They can find all kinds of information about me.
Yeah, spell it. Be Heroes.
Beheroes. Beheroes.net, and they'll find out all kind of information about me and talks that I do and the books and I've got a podcast about the apps and technology for parents as well. So yeah, anything they want to know about me, they could find there. And I kind of pride myself on being accessible. So people have questions or need resources, I hope that they think of me.
Yeah, good. And that, I didn't know you had that podcast. So I saw the write-up when we reached out to you. So I'm going to sign up for that too. Thank you so much.
Sure.
All right. It was great talking to you, Joe, as always. And I hope we'll have another conversation again.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Joe. It's always so fun talking to you. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Same here. Take care.
You too.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Smart Sex, Smart Love. I'm Dr. Joe Court, and you can find me on joecourt.com. That's joekort.com. See you next time. I never met a girl.